Our new neighbor, we just moved into a new place. She hasn't, like, approached the subject
yet. A volume?
We're just seeing how long we can get away with it.
Uh-huh.
But we've had the police come.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Ear Fuel Podcast. My name is Joel Freemark, and as always, you can follow me on Twitter at @GetEarFuel and at The Daily Guru. And the podcast is in the iTunes store under Ear Fuel and, of course, over at SoundCloud.com/GetEarFuel. What you heard at the top was part of my interview with the band Heaters, and it was more than amusing and engaging, as I'm sure you're gathered. We're going to get to that in a few minutes, but first up, we're going to take a look at a new record you absolutely must get your ears on. Today I want to discuss the new record from Floating Points, and it's called Eliana or Elena. There's a tricky AE in the name, so there are many possible pronunciations. Floating Points, if you didn't know it, is the project of UK DJ Sam Shepherd, and you know what? He's not really a DJ. We're going to get into that in a second, but he's been at it for the better part of a decade, and this is his long-awaited first album, and spoiler alert, it was well worth the wait to say the least. This record is a bit hard to define, which makes sense because throughout his career, he's been a bit on the periphery of the London dance and electronic scene. And a lot of people are going to try and force this album under the heading of downtempo or ambient electronic, but the reality is it's so much more than such a simplistic definition. Shepherd has no need for those cliched dub drops or overcomplicating arrangements because what we have here is a true composer with some leanings towards electronic styles, as opposed to someone you would insult by putting the name DJ in front of their name because they can flip knobs and beat match, two totally different things. Adding to that idea, for me, I heard this record in four distinct parts. It was the first two tracks, then the title track stands alone, then you have the middle two tracks, and then the last two all as distinctive parts. If you look at it from a classical standpoint, you can see the record as having four full movements to it, and I have to think that was intentional. The record is full of uniquely meditative soundscapes that you can really sink into, but don't for a moment think that this is some overly mellow affair, because it's not. The opening track sounds like it could be the backing music to a great Bjork song, and there are moments on the album that touch on everything from Pink Floyd to the cinematic orchestra to, I don't know, maybe whale calls? I'm going to go with whale calls. If you hear the album, you'll understand where I'm getting that from. But I think the cinematic orchestra comparison is the most accurate in some ways, as the way that the strings and live instrumentation move on the record show the differences from more straightforward EDM in a very good way, and there's true artistry at work here on every single note. It also allows these songs to have a fantastic emotional impact, yet the overall volume is never raised because it doesn't need to be, and that really helps heighten the mood. It's also, there's a take on kind of that sci-fi sound that you get with heavily deep and instrumental electronic, but it's not sci-fi in the traditional sense. It takes a completely new view that's almost, in some ways, a more hopeful view of that future. I don't know. That's what I got from it. You need to listen to it, and I think you'll agree. There's a 10-minute piece as the second track. It's called Silhouettes Parts 1, 2, and 3, but it doesn't feel like that length because it keeps you engaged the entire time with these brilliant builds and swells, and it keeps pulling you in deeper and deeper. It's an amazing musical achievement. Then you have this cold feel on the song For Marmish that will instantly have you falling in love with this album. Really, it's the ideal track for late night cooling out, and it is, oh, it's an extraordinary sonic piece. You have to check that one out. You've also got the title track that's just, can you tell how much I enjoyed this record? I hope that's coming across. I mean, the moment you hear the title track, you're going to understand why the album took its title from this piece. Throughout the album, it's often the ways that the keys work on tracks that makes them so magnificent. It just adds so much depth, and the tone that you get from the keys in particular is a reminder of what it means to have great tone. While the entire record is fantastic, the album wraps up in a way I don't want to spoil it, but suffice it to say, all you're going to want to do after that is start the record all over again. To be honest, I wasn't expecting too much from this record, and yet after the fact, there's no question that this record is likely going to make my best of 2015 list that I'm going to do in a few weeks. So whether you're into electronic, jazz, ambient, or you just want to hear truly gorgeous music, go get your hands on the new album from Floating Points. Moving on, if you're not yet hip to the band Heaters, you're really missing out. I talked about their new record, Holy Water Pool, a few weeks back when we had our chat with Lionize. So for more info on that album, go check out that episode. The other week, though, they were here in New York City for CMJ Music Week, and I had a chance to sit down and talk music with them. We discussed everything from trying to be good neighbors, like you heard at the top, while playing as loudly as they do, odd interpretations of dance music, and so much more. So, oh yeah, if you hear airplanes in the background on this one, we were outside enjoying the weather. So let's go and get to know the guys from Heaters. Like a beat up fucking tape recorder in the center of the room. So, yeah, what did you guys, when you guys were kind of doing earlier stuff, what sort of techniques were you guys, you know, how low to the ground was it, so to speak?
For recording?
Yeah.
It was pretty simple. I mean, just one condenser,
yeah,
garage band, a living room, and we would just like layer it up. Mm-hmm. We just lay the drums down and then just pass the mic around.
Yeah.
And yeah.
So garage band, you know, with digital recording, you guys definitely saw that as an advantage early on.
Yeah, for sure.
And you guys kind of keep that, you know, today when you guys kind of have a little bit more space, you've got labels who want to put you guys on and do records. How small do you guys like to keep an hour? Are you like, hey, we can get into a big studio. Let's go do a big studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. We still don't really have like the resources to be in the studio of our dreams. But I think it's like we like working with other people, too. Our setup at home just takes a lot of time when we're doing it ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's like not super efficient. So it's rewarding to do it ourselves. But when we're working with other people in a studio, it's, you know, smoother.
So the new record, did you guys do that completely yourselves?
Yeah, the most recent one we did with like two of our friends in Grand Rapids. They just had a little more equipment than us. But we mixed it all.
Just use Logic, basically. Nice.
Yeah.
Garage band on steroids type of thing.
Sure. Sure. And how do you guys write? Because it's kind of groove heavy. I don't want to call it jam heavy because I think that kind of pushes music into a weird place. Not that it's a bad thing. I'm saying I think people have preconceived notions when the word jam comes in. It's very groove heavy. So when you guys are writing, do you just kind of find a groove and say, hey, I think there's a song in there? Or is someone a primary songwriter?
It's pretty, we all like pitch in, but we definitely try to make it, we want it to be dancey to us, like however you want to interpret dancey, but like we like the heavy, thick
groove.
thick rhythm section that needs to be present, because the guitar gets so bright sometimes that it needs to have that bottom end.
And that guitar, that electric 12 string, you know, I was saying last night, you don't see those very often. What brought on the want to have a 12-string electric guitar with, you know, with this sound?
Yeah, it was just a new thing to play with, and it kind of sounds like a sitar sometimes, so that's kind of fun to add to the cliche likeness of it.
What do you guys listen to, you know, when you guys are hanging out and you're not listening to your own stuff and thinking about how amazing it is? What do you guys listen to a lot?
I think a good mix of like older stuff. We both all of us are really into record collections and stuff, and so a good mix of older stuff, and then I think we all like kind of stranger sounding newer stuff. I think of a Foyoxoid, that Chilean band that we've all been pretty into lately. It's like kind of krautrocky and just like you said, like based around those grooves. It's nice
because it's heavy for something a lot of people are calling psych rock. It's heavier than you'd expect. To me, it's more along the lines of a band like Sleep. You know, just kind of that trudgy, and to me, in a very good way, that trudgy, sludgy heaviness. Yeah, I mean, I don't want to push it in to say it's kind of heavy metal, but it's very heavy metal in a way. Just how loud it is. Is that purposeful? Like, do you guys just like it loud as opposed to kind of the more traditional idea of psych rock?
I feel like we can't really help it because we started with like listening to hardcore music and stuff, so. That's definitely just like stuck in my blood, but
it seems like the shows that have like moved us as spectators recently have been really loud ass stuff. Like that Place to Bury Strangers show we saw in Toronto recently, like stuff like that just is what gives us goosebumps. We love, you know, rock and roll, but the kind of intense like shoegazy type stuff can be sweet.
How loud, you know, do you guys get to a point where you're like, okay, that's too loud, like my ears are starting to hurt, or is it just like, yeah, we could go a little bit more? Because I mean, when you get
depending
into smaller
room,
rooms, right,
yeah,
when
right.
you get it like last night, that was a small room, and the walls were very close, and the ceiling was pretty low, and I will tell you guys, I happened to be sitting, because I felt like it, and it was really cool. I kind of got a different sensory experience because the whole table and the seat was vibrating and just fantastic. Cool. Yeah. So you said you kind of grew up on hardcore. Is that just from kind of Michigan in general, or?
I'd say so, yeah. Like, that was just what sparked me to start making music. Just like, oh, that looks so intense and like so fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how
just
did you guys
feel it? You know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. How did you guys kind of come together then?
Andrew and I went to high school together and would drive around and smoke weed and listen to hardcore bands.
As you do. Yeah. As you do.
And then we met Josh in Grand Rapids. He was our neighbor, and he was playing for a different band at the time, and we started jamming together.
He kind of stole him. Yeah. We basically stole him from his old band.
Yeah. And never looked back.
You were kind of like, okay, this is where I need to be.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And Heaters, many interpretations of the name. Where did you guys derive it from?
I think the first time we thought of it was like someone wrote a cool riff and was like, check out this heater I wrote today.
So. Just run with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, you said that you guys, you know, kind of started with GarageBand and, you know, mixed this album with Logic. So for bands these days, are you guys enjoying taking advantage of things like Bandcamp and things like that where you can kind of just push the music out there a lot easier?
Definitely,
It definitely makes it a lot easier for a band to, I mean, having social media and having, you know, stuff like Bandcamp and SoundCloud, it's a really easy way to, like, reach a large audience.
Uh-huh. And to see who's listening to you is really cool.
Yeah, you can track your audience to a certain extent, which is helpful.
Now, do you guys sometimes... Do you go to the point where you're like, oh, not many people liked that one song, but like 50 liked this other. What the hell's wrong with the first one?
Yeah.
You can't always, you know, take that type of interpret that stuff too deeply. But yeah, sometimes.
Yeah, I've learned that our favorite song is not everybody else's favorite song.
Which might be a good thing. Because then it can kind of be like, hey, we're playing this for us tonight. Yeah. You know? Right. You know, and everybody's like, oh, that song.
Yeah.
Whatever. You know, I also had a chance to get my hands on the vinyl. Did you guys choose the colorways of the actual vinyl? Because it's gorgeous.
Yeah, I think Mike and Dom from Beyond Beyond suggested that design, and we were like, hell yes.
Yeah, it's...
Of course. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's pretty. So you guys are all record collectors then?
Yep.
To whatever extent.
When I'm not poor.
Right, exactly. It's you know...
When I'm poor, I collect tapes.
I got this one for 50 cents, man. Yeah. What was it? Was it half side, one half of the Pulse cassettes?
Yeah.
There you go. See, you never know what happens in the rest of the show.
I know, yeah.
You'll never know.
It doesn't work, but just look at it.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about kind of the resurgence that vinyl has seen over the last half decade or so?
It's really cool. I mean, it's like a... It's not, for me, it's like one of the best ways that you can listen to music. It just sounds really natural and like not overproduced. I don't know. I like the hiss and like the lo-fi sound and like hearing the needle crack and kind of pop when you first lay it on the record and stuff like that.
The gorgeous imperfections.
There's something there's something more like intimate about playing a record than, you know, just pushing play on YouTube or something like that.
Which is nice when you're on tour.
Yeah.
To just have like 5,000 songs in your pocket.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that when you need to listen to Britney Spears in the middle of Missouri, you have it.
That has happened.
Yeah. I'm sorry, is this a sore subject that I unknowingly stumbled across? The Britney incident?
Taylor Swift is our...
Yeah, Nolan's a big Taylor Swift fan.
Look, that record, man.
Bad Blood?
I will defend that record. That record is a hell of a pop album.
Yeah, at least she writes her own tunes, or I think that's what I've heard.
So you were saying about, you know, how you can hear those imperfections, you know, you can kind of hear the dirt on the record. There's this resurgence now also of kind of bands leaving a little bit of grime on the record, and you guys are definitely, you can tell on the album, fans of the fuzz and just letting it crackle a bit. Is that just kind of something that really gets you guys going to hear that?
Yeah. Sounds like it's cooking, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, and... So when you guys are in the studio, are you trying to capture a live sound? Do you guys like to separate your studio versions from the live versions? You know, how do you guys approach that difference there?
I don't think we've had like an approach in mind in the past, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. the way we've been writing lately, and I think it'll translate into how we record this time. I think we write for our live shows. We don't want to write songs that aren't fun to play live.
Sure.
So I think that's like a big inspiration, and I think when we record, that'll kind of play into it.
So yeah, we try to write more for a live setting.
Mm-hmm. And with that in mind, because your songs are a bit shorter than people might expect, with, you know, the fact that you guys really get into grooves, and you know, if they see you live, it's definitely going to throw them a bit in a good way again. But how do you guys know when a song is done in the studio?
That's a good question.
Because <Yeah.
laughs> you guys also put a lot of layers in there. You know, it's got a very full, thick sound to it.
Yeah.
When are you like, all right, that one's good?
I think once it's at least 3 minutes long, we're like, okay, we could wrap it up now. And like, we've got like this certain pattern that we write, but
uh-huh.
we want to write longer songs, so yeah. it'll probably change this next album.
And you guys just kind of let it flow a little bit more freely when you're in live, you know, and you guys just kind of sit in the pocket. And so do you guys do exercises or just, you know, visually watching each other to know like, okay, we're going to get out of this now and move on?
Yeah. We jam a lot, so.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that's, we've been lucky there, is that we lived together for the past couple of years, so mm-hmm. we can just play music every day. So I think, yeah.
Do you have neighbors?
Yes.
Do they hate you?
Our new neighbor, we just moved into a new place. She hasn't, like, approached the subject
yet. of like, volume?
We're just seeing how long we can get away with it.
Uh-huh.
But we've had the police come.
Yeah. But luckily, our past houses where we jam in, it's been on a corner. So we only have, like, one neighbor to deal with.
Sure.
It's kind of cool.
Sure. Because I would assume that when you're playing, when you guys are practicing, the volume is at about the same level.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's harsh. It'd be painful.
Should definitely be wearing earplugs at this point. But.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know, you want to hear each other for the next album. You want to be able to hear right. it. Oh, I'm out of tune? What? Yeah. How'd that happen? So, you know, obviously from Michigan, it's a bit of a ways to New York. And, you know, how do you guys see kind of differences in the crowds and stuff between the two cities?
I mean, there's just a smaller music scene in mm-hmm. Grand Rapids.
Yeah.
Obviously, like, New York is huge, so it's really diverse.
Sure.
But there's not a lot of, like, variation in, like, genres, mm-hmm. I don't think, in Michigan for the most part. It's a lot of pop punk bands, which I think are cool, and there's some really great bands in Grand Rapids.
Sure.
But it's hard to, like, when you're doing a show at home, you don't, to, like, find something that, like, sonically works. You know, it's weird for us to, like, play with an acoustic act or something like
yeah.
that,
yeah.
and, like,
cool
a pop punk band. It's a weird...
There's not many weirdos where we're from, so like yeah. coming to New York, it's cool to
yeah, kind of blend in.
I mean, come on, Michigan, that's Alice Cooper and Iggy. I mean,
yeah.
so just there's no like current generation weirdos then.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, it's a state known for weird. But you know, with that though, the psych community that you guys have been kind of playing in for a while now, it does have an odd sense of community that you don't really see in other genres. And what do you guys see as kind of the cause of that, or the cause of that?
I'm not totally sure like how to figure out that mm-hmm. that sense of community, but I just, it seems like everyone that's kind of into the psych type of stuff is just into kind of weird stuff, because it's hard to put your finger on what that means, what mm-hmm. psychedelic means. But as far as I can tell, it just seems like people with a taste for weird sounds.
Different sounds.
Yep.
Would you guys call yourselves a psych band, a neo-psych band?
I mean, I think we have a little bit of like disdain for that word, just because,
yeah.
you know. But yeah, I mean, it's a good point of reference for people.
If you guys got to label what your music is, what would you guys label it as?
We had something cool before.
Yeah.
It's like jangle something.
I like the word cosmic because it reminds me of
cosmic jangles.
Yeah,
cosmic jangle.
Cosmic jangle. Yeah.
So we'll just put a big bill up tonight. Cosmic jangle superstars.
Yeah.
Yep. So you guys have also been getting a lot of positive press on this record, with good reason, because it's a damn good album. And because I'm going to be like your parents were when you were in high school, what are you guys going to look to do next, you know, with your next album? What kind of directions do you guys want to take, or new tricks you might want to try?
Longer songs.
Uh-huh.
Those heavy grooves you pointed out.
Yeah.
So we got to get more into that more.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
probably a little more prog rock. Everyone's telling us that we sound like a prog rock band, which is cool. So we're like,
I'm like a really big fan of the word trance and like trance music. So uh-huh. I like that a lot.
Like trance metal, almost.
Trance metal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could get into that. I could get into that a lot. Yeah, because, you know, when I heard the album for the first time a few weeks back, the very opening was reminiscent of very early Pink Floyd to me, just kind of the opening chord progression. So, you know, where you said, you know, there's definite hardcore influences in there, what other sort of bands, you know, do you guys kind of listen to as inspiration?
Wand from L.A. We did a short tour with them, and those dudes are phenomenal musicians. I don't know. For me, that's, like, one of my favorite bands right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's hard to think of, like, an album that we would take influence from, but it seems like what's the biggest influence for us lately has been, like, the bands we tour with.
Sure.
And, like, seeing them do their thing and jamming together and learning from each other is, like,
Yeah. I've been following Animal Collective for a while, and they're always, they always just inspire me in a new way when I listen to them.
So you guys are obviously here for CMJ. And how many shows are you guys doing? 3, 4, 11?
Five.
We did 3 yesterday. And then we have 1 tonight and 1 tomorrow.
So what's that like for you guys playing 3 sets in a day?
Similar to like our South by Southwest experience. We just run the gauntlet.
Do you guys like it? Do you guys kind of like feel like you can't quite get locked in because you kind of have the next gig in the back of your mind already?
I feel like we get tighter as the day goes on. Like
it feels rushed at times, like getting there and all that. But once you get there, it's like, okay, let's get comfortable and jam. So. Yeah.
Yesterday was kind of weird just because we had driven straight through the night and probably slept a total of 3 hours on the way here.
And then went on at like a little bit before and 10.
So it was definitely like that I'm crazy and haven't slept kind of feeling all day. But
I hope these songs happen.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing about the new record?
Josh's drum beat on the song Gumdrop is my favorite thing to listen to.
I think that's my favorite song on the record, actually. That's just pretty.
Yeah. Or Andrew plays this, there's like this, the first song has that, the record starts with this like guitar loop that's being played in reverse. Mm-hmm. It sounds really insane. That's also a highlight.
Nice.
Yeah, for me, right before the album, I got that 12 string, so I was really excited to record with that. And like before, we weren't going to put any of the 12 string on there, but I was like, all right, we have to throw this on.
Right, it's got to go somewhere because damn it, we have it.
I got excited about that.
And finally, for people who have not heard your music yet, and they will once this is over, because that's going to be their directive. How would you encapsulate your music for people to come see your show? Like, what would you say? You know, like, this is why you should come see our show.
There's this one line that this review said. It was I forget where it was from, but it said it's a good swim, but a dark swirl. And I thought that was kind of
nice,
kind of fun.
Nice.
The darkness isn't always that dark.
Yeah, it feels good.
My thanks again to the guys from Heaters. You can find them on Twitter at Heaters Band, and their new record, Holy Water Pool, is out on Beyond. Beyond is Beyond Records, so go put your ears on it right now. Before we wrap things up for the week, I do, of course, have your weekly Ear Fuel assignment. I wouldn't leave you without it. For those of you new to the podcast, each time we gather, I give one album that you should listen to in its entirety without distraction. It comes from the idea that I feel for so many people, music has become a background task. You're at work, you're in the car, you're at the gym, whatever, and you're really not focusing on the music. So these assignments are all about listening to music for the sake of the music. Now, this week, since we talked pretty much exclusively about vocalist music that grooves really hard, your assignment is, of course, Herbie Hancock's unparalleled 1973 album, Headhunters. While the vast majority of changes and innovations in jazz music happened in the 50s and parts of the 60s, this album unquestionably rewrote the books on what was possible, and many see this as the greatest moment in acid jazz or jazz fusion, or, you know, people throw tons of different stylistic glosses onto this record because it touches so many different styles. By the time he puts out this album, though, Herbie Hancock is already a decade into his recording career, but most will say he just couldn't find the sound he was looking for within his previous sextet. So what did he do? He trims a member from the group, gets rid of the guitar, and starts to draw heavily from the worlds of funk and soul, and of course, a healthy dose of the psychedelic movement that was kind of starting to fade at that time. The result is nothing short of breathtaking, and it's the sort of record you can spin endless amounts of time, and it never loses a bit of its impact or its intrigue. From the outrageously funky opening of Chameleon to the simmering groove on Vain Matter, these are 40 of the finest minutes in music history. You also get a brilliant reworking of his track Watermelon Man, and in some ways, you can trace the history of jazz development by listening to the original, which I think is from 1962, and then you listen to this reworking a decade later. The band throughout the album moves as a single stunning unit on every single note, and much like the music, the album cover is one of the most unforgettable of all time. This album really has it all, and if you're one of those people who are hesitant to step into the world of jazz, this is definitely a good entry point because there's so much funk, there's so much groove, and it's just really, anybody who enjoys music has to know Headhunters. The bottom line is, it is a classic for a reason, so spend some time with it this week and make your ears happy. So that's it for this week. As always, you can follow me on Twitter at GetEarFuel and at The Daily Guru. And if you're in the iTunes store, you can find the podcast, which will automatically update for your listening pleasure under EarFuel. And of course, over at SoundCloud.com/GetEarFuel. And hey, if you dug the podcast, go tell a friend. That is your weekly EarFuel. Share and enjoy.